This is David Hausman, and I'm here at the e-governance secretariat in Bangalore, Karnataka, India, with Mr. M.N. Vidyashankar, the principal secretary to government at the secretariat. Mr. Vidyashankar, have you agreed to be interviewed?
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks so much. I wanted to start by asking you a little bit about your background and how you came to be involved in the Bhumi Kiosk program and then to be secretary of e-governance in Karnataka.
I've been in this department in this third stint for almost a year now. This is my third stint in the department. Have been associated with many technology-related interventions in the state for the past 20 and odd years. So Bhumi was the first flagship project of the department, launched close to 8 years ago. And this project is something that was seen with implementation in the rural areas, which is very important, because normally people say that technology bypasses the rural areas. And this was the first major project of the department which covered the entire rural population in Karnataka state. Before we went to the urban areas in a big way, we wanted to prove that technology can make a definite impact for the people living in the rural areas, and this was the best possible project that the department could think of.
Right. Can you say which positions you had before you became principal secretary?
Well, I was also principal secretary to the Department of IT, that is Information Technology, Biotechnology and Science and Technology. I was commissioner of the Bangalore Development Authority. I was chairman of Bangalore Water Supply Board. In fact, in Bangalore Water Supply Board, we had close to 40 plus interventions with technology as the principal input. And we got some more than 35 recognitions statewide, nationally, and globally.
And when did you actually become involved personally with the Bhumi project?
About close to 5 years ago.
Okay. So at that time, it had already been implemented in,
yes,
in
but
all the
time. I was following up the implementation of Bhumi because, as I said, you know, the last 20 and odd years, I've been in areas where technology has been, you know, taken a front seat in governance-related issues.
So when you first began to have responsibility for Bhumi, or for parts of Bhumi, can you describe some of the challenges that you faced?
There was initially some resistance, because any technology intervention, and that too 8 years ago, we did witness some resistance. The resistance was more to do with the kind of discretionary power that you know, the officials normally have. And that kind of a discretionary power, discretionary exercise of rights was taken away. Normally you do encounter resistance. There was some resistance. But I must say that the political wing was gung-ho about the project. You know, they knew that this project is going to make a lot of difference, especially in the rural areas, because technology is going to add a lot of value, bringing in a lot of transparency, bringing in a lot of accountability, bringing in a lot of answerability. So the political wing was very much with us.
And was that true of both parties?
Irrespective of the political party. So the ownership was very good at the political level, which made it easier for us to drive through, even if there was resistance at the official level.
Can you say more about the resistance at the official level? What form did it take?
Basically, you know, suppose the village accountant or the revenue inspector or the tahsildar, who the tahsildar is the head of the block, head of the tahsil or the taluka as we refer to, he or she could oblige a particular person in jumping the queue, especially in giving certificates, in giving the record of rights or the RTC as we call it. So it was not first in, first out, in a manual process. And this system introduced an element of discipline, ensured an element of transparency in all the official matters. So naturally one does come across resistance, more so because this was the first exercise in the country. So we did have some sort of a recalcitrant attitude on the part of the field level functionaries, which we had to overcome only as a result of massive training programs that we embarked upon. We started this exercise as a pilot in a district which was close to Bangalore in Kolar district, and then we implemented it through and through in Kolar district, and then scaled it up through the state.
Can you say more about exactly the state of the implementation of the program, mm-hmm. 5 years ago when you became involved?
Mm-hmm. What we did was we first had to do a lot of data entry, putting all the manual scripts into a digital format. We did this engaging the services of a private operator, outsourcing data entry operators. Once the data was entered, somebody had to certify that the data entered was truly an authentic copy of the manual version that was available. So it involved an element of certification, authentication by the revenue department, saying that it was the digital copy was a true reflection of the manual copy maintained. So it did involve a lot of workflow. It did involve a lot of processes. And it did involve, in fact, massive training inputs at each one of the levels, to the village accountants, to the revenue inspectors, to the taluka heads, the block heads.
And can you say more about the training, what form it took exactly?
Yeah, in fact, the training was, the designing of the training, the content of the training was done in-house. And then we went to almost all the districts, engaging. Here again, we had some private sector participation in getting some resource persons, and getting some help in terms of multimedia and so on. These trainings were organized well as per a schedule that we drew up for the entire state, going from district to district. The initially we went ahead training the trainers. That was the first level of training. These trainers in turn went to the districts, who in turn also administered a test. You know, if the trainees who had undergone the training had fully captured the content that was delivered and the kind of exercise they had to do post the training. So it was a very detailed exercise which went on for close to 11 to 12 months. Sometimes we had to give these training inputs more than once, more than twice, more than thrice, just to ensure that they are fully abreast, they are fully, you know, into it once the training was administered to them.
In what year did that happen, those 11 to 13 months?
It, as I said, started off about 8 years ago. It went on, you know, close to 3 to 4 years after the first input of training, because, you know, the officials were transferred. It's not that the same person got training. Once an official was transferred, the training had to be re-imparted to the new incumbent in the position. It happened at all levels, at the grassroots level, which is the village accountant, at the middle level, which was the revenue inspector, and then the tahsildar at the block level.
And how did you go about finding the trainers to train for the first
It day? Was partly in-house, and I said partly outsourced. We did have some official resource persons on board with us, outsourced from private agencies, who are very good at it, because you know, we had given them all kinds of training that was necessary in the revenue department, especially dealing with the record of rights.
And about how many trainers did you train?
Oh, almost it was 10 to 12 in every district. Currently we have 30 districts. So we had master trainers, and these master trainers training the trainers, and those trainers in turn acting as resource persons to train the ground level officials.
So about how many master trainers were there?
At least 16 to 17 of them.
Okay. So 16 to 17 master trainers.
16 to 17. Yeah, 16 to 17. They in turn training the trainers.
And how many? And there were about 300 of those?
Yeah, about... easily about 10 to 12 per district.
Okay. And then What about the people who are responsible in the districts themselves? How many were there?
Oh, that, you know, every block, depending on the number of blocks, for example, the district of Tumkur, which is close to Bangalore, has 11 blocks. Each block has a number of hoblis. Each hobli has a number of village accountants. So close to 9,000 village accountants, close to 250 revenue inspectors, and 176 block officers, because we have 176 blocks.
So
9,000 village accountants, 250 revenue inspectors, and 176 block level officials.
So those were the recipients?
Yes. That gives us a number of close to 10,000.
And can you say a little bit about the curriculum of the training? What exactly
basically,
did it do?
What we went ahead was, we took the record of rights. In the record of rights, there are a number of fields. How each field had to be entered, and after entry, how the same thing had to be, verified, authenticated. And then, what is it that the server in a block office does? What is it that the back office does? What is it that the front office is supposed to do? And as soon as a person gives an application seeking an RTC, what are the functions that a person has to perform in the front office?
And was this all in the form of kind of seminars, or was there actual on-the-job
training? It was hands-on.
So can you describe to me a typical training?
Basically a desktop with a keyboard, with a processor, how to open the system to begin with. In fact, we had to teach them even how to open the system, how to boot the system.
So I'm sitting here, let's say I'm a revenue inspector.
Right.
And you come and you're a trainer. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be sitting here and you would physically show me at the
physically
computer.
Physically show how the screen looks like, how to log in with a password, giving them a password, how to change the password. And having said that, if a farmer comes making a request for a particular record of rights belonging to him or her, how to open that particular record of right, how to get a printout, and how to troubleshoot, some of the basics of troubleshooting. Of course, not very complicated ones, because they are the ones who are totally not tech savvy as we expect them to be, absolute novices. What to do with some basics of troubleshooting, and in case they can't resolve the problem, how to escalate it.
And was there separate training for the data entry phase and then for the the actual operations phase?
Data entry was done by professionals. We did hire data entry from the market, so they were good at it, but they had to be familiarized with the field, the kind of fields that they had to populate the data with.
What were some of the other things that came up once the system was working? Mm-hmm. when you came on board, I guess, in 2005? Mm-hmm. What were some of the things you had to tweak or change, some obstacles that came up?
The obstacle was more in terms of operational work. The server update, whatever changes you do in the record of rights, because record of rights is a very, very important document. It gives it has a presumptive value of title to a particular property. So one had to maintain it. And one had to maintain it in such a way that whatever entry is done in the record of rights, there is an audit trail. So maintaining an audit trail was a very, very important component of the entire exercise that we went about. And about 6-7 years ago, we also came out with a data center of our own. We were the first state in the country to have our own data center. In fact, today, the entire Bhoomi data resides in the data center. And what happens is, the transactions from the beginning of the day to the end of the day, end of the business day, whatever transactions take place, they get replicated in the data center at the end of the day. So that next day morning, when you open the data center, or when you open the system in the block office, you have all the changes incorporated in them.
And is that data center in the Bumi monitoring cell or here?
No, it's with us. It's in
the e-governance secretariat.
E-governance secretariat.
And what are the respective roles of the revenue department and the e-governance secretariat in the program?
We frequently exchange. Right now, Bumi has been handed over to the Bumi monitoring cell. They do the day-to-day activity of Bumi monitoring cell. It's in the revenue department. But we give the entire support system in the data center. If they have any issues with the data center, any issues with replication of data, we take care of it. Because now we were waiting for the system to reach a level of sustainability and maturity. And once that is done, you know, the ownership lies with them. So it's always good to hand over to them. So right now it's with the revenue department, but hosting of data is something we do. Replication of data is something we do on a daily basis.
And going back briefly to the training, how was it that the training actually overcame resistance from officials?
No, in addition to training was only to make them comfortable operating the system, living with the system. But there were certain change management inputs also, which were delivered as a part of the training. As I said, you know, we had master trainers who also inculcated the advantages of introducing technology. What were the advantages, even at their level? What about customer satisfaction? What about customer delight? What about issues related to, transparency, the advantages of transparency? And ultimately, accountability to the society, accountability to the general public.
But I mean, if I'm a village accountant and I'm getting lots of money by soliciting bribes for RTCs, do you think I'm going to care so much about customer satisfaction?
What's the way out? What's the option? Either you do it or somebody else comes in your place and then does it. That was the carrot and stick. Either you fall in line or somebody else comes, because you know there are too many aspirants for this post. So a tahsildar today, for example, he can work either in a block, or he could be in the secretariat, or he could be in a different department. So if you want to work there, you better fall in line. And we didn't give them a choice.
You also mentioned establishing an audit trail. How did you establish an audit trail?
No, that was a part of the software program that we developed for the Bumi, and that was developed by the NIC, the National Informatics Center. In fact, even today it's maintained by them. All the patches, all the upgradations, it's given by them. What we do is, before it is deployed, we do some sort of sustainability analysis and see in case it meets certain minimum parameters that a software patch should adhere to.
Can you say a little more about your personal role? What things you managed personally in the program?
As I said, once it reached a certain level of maturity, now today nobody questions, why was Bumi introduced? Why was the earlier system jettisoned? Why was it dispensed with altogether? Nobody questions it. In fact, today, if Bumi does not function, then nobody gets a record of write. And on a daily basis, we give 45,000 record of rights on a daily basis. So it is almost an indispensable component of the revenue machinery today, revenue administration today.
And in your current position as e-governance secretary, does it occupy much of your time, or does it now more or less move
on its
own? It's
almost stabilized. What we are doing is that, there are three streams in revenue administration. Bumi is only one stream. When you buy a title to land or buy a title to property, the first thing that you look forward to is that you need a record of right. You require a title, which is Bumi, which is the first stream. After you get the title, you need to transfer the title in your name. That's called a mutation. After you get the title mutated in your favor, the third is you need a sketch. So there are three streams. And these three streams, when Bumi was introduced, were operating in three silos. they were not talking to each other. Today what has happened is that Bhumi talks to the second stream, which is the mutation. Now the third stream of getting a sketch map of what you own, the property that you own, the third stream is now being integrated. It has not happened as yet, but will happen in the due course of time. Otherwise, you as an individual, suppose you buy an acre of land or a hectare of land, you first undergo a transaction, that is, you enter into a sale deed. Now, after you get a sale deed, you need to get the title changed on the basis of the sale deed. Second stream. The third stream of getting a sketch map. So the third stream is now, which is now being integrated. The first and the second streams have been fully integrated. So you get your mutation, that means you get your title after you enter into a sale deed, electronically, digitally. But you don't get a digital sketch map. We are now navigating and moving into the third stage, where as soon as you buy a title, not only do you get the title in the form of a record of right, or fully mutated in your name, but you also get a sketch map of what you own, or what you have bought, or what you have been gifted, or what you have taken it as a form of lease.
Let me ask you now a little bit about Nemedy. Mm-hmm. Can you describe how the idea for Nemedy came about?
You see, are you aware of Bangalore One? No?
No.
Okay. In Bangalore, we have something called Bangalore One, which doles out close to 40 plus services to the people in Bangalore. It's a one-stop shop. It's a one-stop, non-stop shop. It works 24/7. 24/7/365. It doesn't close at all. Now, these services were available to the urbanites, but only in Bangalore. Now, a similar service was not available to the people in rural areas. In the rural areas, in addition to getting the record of rights, which is what Bhumi did, they require birth certificates, they require death certificates, they require ownership certificates, they require some certificates dealing with their income, dealing with their holding, dealing with, they also wanted computer training, they also wanted to pay their insurance premium, and so on and so forth. Now, all these services were available in an urban area through these one-stop shop, one-stop, non-stop shop.
And were the Bangalore One kiosks or one-stop shops, did they have operators there?
Yeah.
So there were operators employed year-round?
24/7.
How many
of
them were there?
We have 60 such centers in Bangalore.
Okay.
We are now increasing it to 100.
When did that begin?
5 years ago. Now, after we introduced Bangalore One, we wanted to have a similar outfit in a rural area. Nemedi was the answer. Nemedi means comfort. We started off about 4 years ago, after Bangalore One was started. To be precise, it was October of 2006. Bangalore One was 2005. Nemedi was October of 2006. We started off with Nemedi. As I mentioned, there's something called Hobli, revenue inspector. Revenue inspector is in charge of the middle tier between the village and the block. So at the Hobli level, we introduced Nemedi. We have 745 Hoblis in Karnataka state. Today, we have 799 Nemedi centers running. Because some Hoblis, the transactions are so much more that one Hobli center, one Nemedi center cannot take care of all the load. So we have set up an additional one. So we have 799 Nemedi in 745 Hoblis. Hobli spelled as H-O-B-L-I. So that's the equivalent of Bangalore One. Today we are giving close to 38 services. Most of them are G2C services. Some of them are B2C services. Yes.
Can you describe what it was like beginning to implement Nemini? Mm-hmm. What was the first step?
Building up an RFP so that we could invite.
Building up a
RFP. RFP is basically a tender document.
Okay. What does it RFP stand for?
Request for proposal. That is only 32, but there are 38 services. Now it's 38. You have a tender document floated, and then ask the bidders to bid for the tender document. Now it's being run by an agency called COMAT, C-O-M-A-T. COMAT Technologies, they are running. It's also a PPP model, where
public-private partnership.
Public-private partnership model, where it is run by a private entity, it is manned by a private entity, but doling out services, as I said, G2C and government to customer and business to customer.
How did you decide on a PPP model instead of just implementing it yourselves through government?
None of the e-governance initiatives in the state, none, I repeat, are services which are exclusively rendered by the department. Because we know that some of the services can be delivered much better if you have a private partner with you.
Why?
Number one, when it comes to delivery of customer services, the private sector has an upper hand. We know it for sure. I don't think we need to prove it because it's been the case for quite some time now.
So you didn't consider actually hiring, 800 people to man these
telecenters? No, that's not our core competence.
Okay.
In fact, all the 30 and odd applications and solutions of the Department of E-Governance, they are based on a PPP model. All of them, without exception, including the State Data Center. We don't own the State Data Center, but we host our applications in a data center which is run by a private entity.
And Boomi, for example, actually required the hiring of more state employees. Mm-hmm. So why couldn't that have been done for Nemini?
Nemini required running a telecenter. A telecenter run by government, and that too, when you know that a private entity can do the job much better.
But couldn't you have said that about the Boomi kiosks?
Mm-hmm. Right now, all the Boomi services are being given through Nemini, again a private outfit.
But originally they were given through government. So I'm just trying to understand why it made sense to
because
do
Boomi.
Because
it was only one
government.
Document. Here there are 38 documents, 38 services. Giving a printout of a title, that doesn't make, too much of a difference. Instead of manually signing it, I am only giving you a digitally signed copy. That's it. But here, you are giving a death certificate, a birth certificate, a holding certificate, okay, a caste certificate. I'm also giving computer training to aspiring rural youth. I'm collecting insurance premium, blah, blah, blah. All those 38 services. And when you are doling out so many services, it's done much, much better by a private entity than by a government entity. Bangalore One, a PPP model, each center has, which runs three shifts a day, it's manned by a private entity. Outsourcing is a buzzword now. It's fully established now. I don't think anybody doubts, hiring a private agency to dole out services.
And how do you go about supervising that agency and making sure that they're actually following through?
There are a couple of ways we do the supervision. One is through the SLA, the service level agreements we have with COMAT. I'll cite only one example. The telecenter operator comes at 9 o'clock in the morning. As soon as the telecenter operator comes, he or she is supposed to log in. And once he or she logs in, we get the message. So we know who has pinged, who has not pinged.
So even though they're managing their personnel, you actually know individually
know,
who has come in.
We know each one of these 799 centers, at what time did they log in? Did they log in at 9 o'clock or did they log in at 9:15? What time did they log out? And after having logged in, they are supposed to ping the system every 2 hours. Because, you know, I can log in and go home. And we also see the number of transactions done in every telecenter every day. And everything is done centrally. We do it through our data center in Bangalore.
And what do you do when you see that at a certain telecenter not much is getting done?
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that
we
situation?
We check with them what's wrong, if the telecenter operator is present or not present. If he is present, why is it the transaction is not? Is there any problem with the connectivity? Is there any problem with bandwidth? Is there any problem with the system? And normally, you know, since they are dealing with farmers and the rural population, we get complaint at the drop of a hat. Suppose the system is down at 9:30 in the morning. I get a call at 9:30 in the morning saying this: the system is down, something has to be done. The connectivity is broken, something has to be done. And we have a help desk here. And people contact the help desk and immediately give a complaint. And there are penalties. You know, you also ask, how do you manage to ensure that, you know, how do you monitor them? There are very stiff penalties on non-performance and non-conformance to the SLAs.
What are the penalties?
Huge, financial.
For the company? But you don't administer any penalties to individual employees yourself?
We also change the telecenter operator. Suppose we feel or we find out that the telecenter operator is not working to our expectations, not as cordial to the general public, we change the telecenter operator. The deputy commissioner of the district has now been given the powers to change the telecenter operator.
And if you were to do all of this again, if you were implementing Bumi and then Nemedy
mm-hmm.
again,
mm-hmm.
are there any things you would do differently a second time?
Yes, I think I'll centralize the whole system. Now it's a decentralized architecture. Bumi, we have Bumi servers in each one of the districts. The servers in turn talk to the data center. Now, if I were to do a new architecture altogether, I would centralize the whole system. Now, every client talking to the state data center directly, because connectivity these days is not an issue at all. We have got robust connectivity. We have got robust bandwidth. That's not an issue. When it was implemented, we went to VSAT. You know, Bumi began with a VSAT. Now it's on SWAN. So VSAN, there are, you know, the limitations. You have limitations on bandwidth, limitations on response time. So since we are on KSWAN now, I would go in for a centralized architecture.
VSAT, it stands for?
Very slow.
Sorry?
It's
a satellite connection. No? And what does it stand for?
Very small aperture terminal.
Okay. And what is that? The KSWAN stand
Sorry,
for?
Karnataka State Wide Area Network. It's a wide area
okay.
network.
Okay, all right.
We have it throughout the state.
Okay. Great. Well,
my mail
you.
Is
Thanks
open
so
24
much.
By 7.
Thank you. Yeah.